On to item seven. Actually, we need to bring Donnie back into the room. Can someone notify Donnie? Please. Oh, I see Donald Finley is back in the room.
Reporting for duty as ordered, sir.
Thank you for your service. We're on to item seven, presentation from PARS regarding our IRS Section 115 trust for OPEB for CISERA employees. Gail, who will be introducing this item?
It will be me.
Okay, you have the floor.
So, good morning, board. Back in November of 2018, the board approved the adoption of an OPEB trust for CISERA employees. Subsequently, we entered into a contract with PARS to provide trust fund management services. And so today we have Jennifer Meza from PARS, as well as Andrew Brown from Highmark. Highmark handles the investment management services of the OPEB trust. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jennifer.
Perfect. I don't seem to be able to share my screen.
Is someone able to?
We are working on that.
Make her a co-host is sometimes the quickest way to do it, unless you just hit the green share screen and change the settings.
Thanks, Candace.
Jennifer, could you try and click on share screen?
I don't have any options available. I just have the unmute or mute button available.
Okay.
Are you on? If you're on a desktop, it may just be at the bottom of your screen. Could you see your mute, stop video, participant, share screen?
I only see a mute. There's no other options. I don't know if they've given me access.
Well, if you're elevated as a panelist, you should. I think he's, from my experience, make her a co-host and you'll be better off.
Thank you, Candace.
If you have her slides, walk her, unless you have her slides, and then you can walk us through, you know, she can just say next.
We do have the slides as well.
I've been given access.
Okay, great.
Thank you so much. Okay, can everybody see that there?
Yes.
Not speaking for everyone, but I see it.
Yes.
So we can go ahead now.
Okay, perfect. Well, good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Thank you so much for having us here today. This is our second year presenting the information. While I know many of you are familiar with our company and our product and so forth, as I review the presentation, please make sure to stop us at any time to ask questions. We're happy to answer anything for you here. First slide, as I mentioned, my name is Jennifer Meza. I'm one of the managers in the consulting team at PARS. Along with me today is Andrew Brown as well, and you may be familiar with other members of our company as well. We are the lucky ones to be able to present here today in front of you. Slide number three provides you with all of the different parties within the trust. None of this information has changed from last year, but just to familiarize yourselves with it, I am from PARS, the top company there. We actually provide the ongoing consulting and record keeping for the trust itself. There are two other companies involved in this trust, and that would be U.S. Bank, who is the institution holding the assets for this exclusive benefit. And then, of course, Andrews from Highmark Capital Management, the investment company on the account. Very simple and straightforward. No changes have been made since we last met. Slide number four provides you with the administrative information for the program. So I will cover this section, and then we'll go into the return information. Top portion, as Gail mentioned, this plan was implemented back on December 1st of 2018. The board did select Gail as her position as the chief executive officer to be the plan administrator so she can make any changes on behalf of the board for this program. As I mentioned, Andrew will go over the customized investment strategy that you're currently in. The eligibility for the program that you're currently pre-funding is for the employees of CISERA that retire after December 31st, 2014. The bottom information are your assets as of the end of the year. So initially you submitted a contribution back in December of 2018, so 2.5. Since the inception of this program since 2018, you've submitted an additional $1.3 million, making it a total of $3.9 million in contributions. The next slide, we're going to show what the agency did within the last year, but this is since inception. The disbursements out of the account have been approximately $69,000. Total investment earnings since inception, approximately $935,000. Expenses for PARS, Highmark, and U.S. Bank, approximately $40,000, making your account balance as of December 31st at $4.7 million. Slide number 5 shows you the activity for the last year since our last meeting. So this is as of 2020. Contributions in this calendar year were approximately $536,000. And this year, this is when you did take out that reimbursement of $69,000. So it all came out in one request. Earnings for this period of time were approximately $590,000, and the fees for the year, $24,000 there. And again, your account balance at $4.7 million. Okay. Slide number 6 and slide number 7 are based on your last full actuarial evaluation that was measured as of December 31st, 2018. This is information that we reviewed last year as well, so it's not new information on there. But we always like to remind you of who's eligible for the program and what your liability is. Just so when you start talking about the investments, you kind of have a guide of, you know, where you're at as far as your liability itself. For this program, you have about 56 employees that are eligible for the plan. 52 are still active, currently working there, and 4 are currently receiving that benefit. Bottom lines show you some demographic regarding those that are active as far as the average age and how long they have been there. Slide number 7, at the top, you see the discount rate or the long-term expected rate of return for your 115 trust or your OPEB trust, and that is at 6.75. That has not changed. We are happy to report that since you've inception that, you know, this is maybe Andrew's portion, but we are happy to report that we have met that discount rate thus far. The total OPEB liability, the liability that the agency has for this program that has accrued, has been $4.7 million. At this point in time, since it's just a snapshot in time, you had about $2.5 million in assets, making your unfunded liability, or what we now call the net OPEB liability, at $2.1 million on there. Of course, as I mentioned, it's a snapshot in time. Once this valuation is redone again, your new assets will be accounted for and your funded status will go, of course, up as you now have more money set aside. At this time, your funded ratio was only about 54%. Your actuarial determined liability, or what the actuary indicates you should be funding the trust at, is about $500,000 on there. And your annual benefit payouts, what you're currently paying out, is about $50,000. So just a quick review regarding your assets and the liability on the account. I'm happy to take any questions at this time, or we can go on to the investments and we can take questions at any point, however you'd wish.
Any questions for Jennifer? Not hearing any, so I believe we'll move on to Andrew Brown.
Perfect.
Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks, Todd. Great to be with everybody again this year. I'm Andrew Brown. I am the lead portfolio manager on the plan. And similar to last year, my presentation should last about 8 to 10 minutes. And I'm going to touch on 3 topics. First, I'm going to touch on our economic forecast outlook for the next 2 years. Secondly, I will address plan performance for the OPEB plan in the calendar year 2020. And then finally, I'll look at the positioning asset allocation for the plan. So in terms of the first topic here, our slide here, 2020 was kind of humbling in terms of trying to forecast the economic output, GDP and whatnot, in the midst of a pandemic. And so while 2021 might not be as challenging as 2020 was, there's certainly a ton of variables out there that might make nailing the number somewhat difficult. And so with that thought in mind, I think maybe it's a little bit less relevant if we get, you know, GDP 4.5 to 5.5 right for the next 12 months, But instead, I think, you know, it might be a little more insightful to sort of combine these two columns together and then sort of look at the picture that's being painted. And I think when you do that, you know, you're looking at the top line GDP, 4.5 to 5.5 this year, 3.4 to 4.4% next year. You know, you put those two columns together and you're looking at, you know, 2 years of annualized GDP, possibly high 3, low 4% levels. With that, S&P 500 earnings should follow in lockstep, and we should see a sharp rebound in terms of S&P 500 earnings. Our target there, 165 to 175 this year, 190 to 210 next year. And if that were to happen, then yeah, we should see some improvement on the jobs front, with unemployment dipping to, from our standpoint, 5.7 to 6.4 this year. That 4.8% seems to be a little ambitious for the end of 2022, but the firm forecast is 4.8 to 5.5 at the end of calendar year 2022. In terms of inflation, I think that this is probably the biggest point of disagreement within our firm. There's probably 40% of the folks on the asset allocation committee that see, you know, $3-5 trillion worth of stimulus, and they say, how could that not be inflationary? Why are we capping our inflationary forecast at 2%? And then conversely, there's probably 60% of us that would say, well, you know, the Fed had 10 years to try to engineer some type of inflation. They haven't been able to do it. While there might be a bottleneck or shortage here and there, and some pockets of the economy might see some type of inflation pickup, it's sort of a show me story. Globalization hasn't gone out of, you know, gone away. Amazon, you know, Walmart, Costco, certainly deflationary forces there. So it is sort of a debated topic, a highly debated topic within our firm, this 1.8 to 2%. Inflationary forecast. And it does play a significant role, especially how it dovetails into that last item at the bottom of the page, where our prediction on the Fed funds forecast of 0 to 0.25%. We do not see the Fed raising rates over the next 2 years. However, if we did see a significant spike in inflation sustained over what the Fed has been currently targeting, yeah, then you might see the shorter end of the curve rise. But as it stands right now, our forecast is no change on the Fed funds for the next 2 years. Jennifer, please turn to page 10. Okay. Performance. Set the table in terms of how we set this performance page up, The column headers are calendar periods of time. So we would have the quarter, year to date, 1 year, and in this case, the inception to date periods of time. And then the rows, the black colored fonts would represent our planned segment performance. And then underneath that, we would provide in brown or mustard colored, however it's showing up on your screen, a representative benchmark. And then at the bottom of the page, we show gross, net, and then the planned blended benchmark. And when we look at performance on the surface, it would seem attractive both on an absolute basis and a relative basis for 2020. On an absolute basis, I guess I would start with the net of return number, which is the second row from the bottom, where we show 13.15% net of fee return for calendar year 2020. And if you think about a 61 or a 62% average equity position, that type of output then generating a 13.15% rate of return, that would seem an attractive 12-month run rate. Especially, I guess, if you go back to March 31 and you think about getting a call option on, hey, I can give you 13.15% for the end of this year. Would you take it? I think a lot of us would have taken that on March 31st. So 13.15%, I'm pleased to show that to the board. On a relative basis, we do have a planned benchmark, and that is depicted at the bottom line or the bottom row on this page where 11.78% is our benchmark target. And so at least on the surface, 13.15% is 1.37, 137 basis points above the plan benchmark. So that would appear attractive as well. However, if you sort of look under the tent and you see what was really the driver of that outperformance, 99%, no, really 99%, 136 basis points of the 137 basis points of outperformance came in that period of time from February to May when the equity markets were struggling and we were positioned underweight to the equity market. So that really was the driver basically all of the outperformance on a relative basis. The rest of the 8 months were basically a push in terms of performance versus the benchmark. And in reviewing that with staff last week, they thought it might be helpful to show the board the following exhibit. Jennifer, can you go to page 11, please? And so on page 11, the top part of the page is our end of the year asset allocation positioning. However, at the bottom of the page, I show the end of the month, 12-month positioning with respect to asset allocation. And as you go from left to right, you can see our February through May positioning. And keep in mind, policy for the plan is 62% equities. So to the extent that 62% is the neutral position, February at 59%, March 56.8%, April 58%, May 59%. Three out of those 4 months, the attribution was positive for the outperformance. So that really explains the bulk of the relative outperformance for 2020. As you sort of migrate throughout the course of the calendar year, you can focus on August, where we were back to what we would call a neutral position relative to equities at 62%. And then in November, the month of November, we moved to a 3% overweight to equities. And that's currently where we stand at the end of the calendar year, and it's where we stand here in February. Breaking out that 65%, 3% overweight might be a little more useful to go to the top part of this exhibit, where we have the five primary equity categories that we invest in: large cap, small cap, international, developed, emerging markets, and then real estate with REITs. With respect to that overweight, we would carry a 1% overweight to large cap, and we would have a 2% overweight to emerging markets, with the other three categories, what we would call a neutral allocation to the plan benchmark. Commensurately, the fixed income allocation would be a 3.5% underweight, with the underweight primarily in that short-term fixed income line item there. And then we're also about 1.5% underweight in terms of a treasury, our treasury benchmark. Cash, we've kept cash low, as you can see at the bottom of the page, and then currently, 0.65%. But since cash isn't part of our blended benchmark, by definition, anything we have in cash would be an overweight. So we would say that would be a 0.5% overweight. And so that's where we ended the calendar year: 65% equities, 34.5% fixed income, and then 0.5% in cash. The last page is the underlying investments that we're invested in. The equities are all index type of investments. On the fixed income side, our short-term fixed income, as well as our treasury investment, all ETF-based. We do employ three active managers on the fixed income side: Double Line, PGIM, and PIMCO Total Return Bond Fund for active management for fixed income. So let me pause and see if there's any questions with respect to performance or positioning.
Any questions for Andrew? I'm not hearing any. So thank you for that presentation.
Thank you. Good to see everybody.
Oh, we do have some. Yes, Jerry.
I have a question. If I could go, I apologize for this. It's for Jennifer. Quick question. You have a 54% funded ratio. Please remind me whether or not you think there's kind of a sweet spot for a funding ratio for a trust fund like this.
Is it? So, yeah, the goal is always to get to close to 100. The district or your agency, I'm sorry, did do a roll forward report, which shows you actually closer to 70% funded. So the goal, again, the closer you get to 100, the best. There's not a lot of agencies in California that are in such great position that your agency is in. So I will tell you, even a 70% funded status is actually a great place to be at. Most agencies are just putting anything they can into the 115 trust. Most are under 50% on there. So while for pension programs, typically we see funded status between 60 to 80%, let alone, can they get something like that into an OPEB pre-funding trust program? Your agency is in a great position. As I mentioned, you're actually closer to 70 to 80% funded. But again, the goal is always to stay 100% funded so you can earn as much as you can from the investments and then start paying those benefit payments out of the trust itself. So you're in a great place.
Good. Thank you very much.
And just a comment, the roll forward was for the middle of last year. And so Sisera did issue an RFP for an actuary for the OPEB trust. We're currently evaluating proposals, and there will be an OPEB valuation conducted this year, because as you see on the screen, the latest one was done in 2018. So I would expect it'll be 70 or above that, possibly.
Thank you. Sorry to go back, Todd.
No. I'm going to actually piggyback on your question. What is the amortization period of the remaining NOL?
So based on the 2018 report, it was 30 years as of 2018. So we're 2 years down from that period at this point.
Okay. Seems high, but okay. Anything else for either Jennifer or Andrew? Okay, not hearing anything, so I want to thank you both for this presentation.
Thank you for your time.
Take care.
You too.